Hey everybody, and welcome to The Void, a show dedicated to filling the void between being an employee and becoming self-employed. Most people refer to starting their own company as taking the leap, as if they're blindly jumping off a cliff and into the unknown. This show is here to help you understand that it doesn't have to be that way. As always, if you like what you're hearing on the show, please do us a favor and help share The Void with somebody else who might be wanting to start their own company. We saw an opportunity to help others understand that self-employment is well within your reach, and just as our businesses have grown organically and by word of mouth, we want this show to grow the same way. So if you see somebody asking questions about starting their own service-based business, please do us a favor and send them a link to the show. I'm your host, Mitch Smedley. With me, as always, is David Hilton.
Been here an hour.
Yeah?
An hour. We're just now starting.
Yeah.
You know?
Well?
I mean, I love you, but damn, man. We got shit to do.
You got pre-show foreplay we got to get.
Pre-show foreplay. That's great.
I got to get you in the mood. We talked about the ambiguously gay duo.
The ambiguously gay duo. We talked about a lot of things already. Yeah. Today.
Today.
To no avail.
Today.
Today.
Yeah.
As Ray would say.
Today. Hey, do you have a truck yet?
Nope. Mm.
I found one today I was going to send you. And then I was like, I'm not going to send that to him.
Did the ambiguously gay duo drive it before?
No, the owner's. I know the owner is questionable.
Austin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
saw it too.
You saw it. Okay.
Yeah. First off, it's a great truck.
It's a good looking truck.
It's a great truck. But when you do all that kind of stuff to a diesel,
yes.
You know he's run the dog shit out of it.
I saw the laundry list of things and it's like, that's probably been ran the piss out of.
Yeah.
That's one of those diesels that gives somebody's like $20,000 in headaches
in
the first few years of ownership.
Yeah. It's probably a good truck. And he's only asking $35 for it. You could probably get it for $30. I'm 43. I don't need headaches. I need something reliable.
Yeah. I'm not deleting my diesel. I'm not doing track bars and all this racing. Like,
I just
give me.
Like, if I was going to do that, I like that stuff. It's cool as shit.
Yeah.
But if I was going to do it, I have one, and then that's all I would do it. I would just joyride it. It'd be like having a classic car or supercar. Same thing.
You're not going to get in that truck and go drive to Colorado.
No. I'm not going to tow my boat 4 hours with that. You know, I don't want that headache. It's my fault. I've driven like 10 trucks. I've found 4 or 5 that I would like. To be honest, I don't know if it's my age or what.
You're just stingy and don't want to spend the money.
I think it's that, and I can't make up my mind.
Yeah.
Which is weird because I've always been one of those people that's like, nope, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing X, Y, and Z, and we're going to get there, and that's how it's going to be.
In your own words, a car is a tool, and you got to make sure you're buying the right tool.
Yeah, but man, it's just my indecision lately has been, it's been weird. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if it's my age or
you know what helps with decision making?
Alcohol.
TRT. Provides clarity, mental clarity.
Man, I don't want to insult you here, but I'm going to say that's not true because you and I have some weird debates about some weird things, and you seem to be all over the map in like a 3-month span.
What do you mean? Like,
so I'm calling,
standing your ground at the drive thru McDonald's?
No, but that was a great debate.
Yeah.
But
those that don't follow me on Facebook, I posted yesterday because we went to a fast food place.
You went to Culver's?
No.
Wasn't Culver's?
No.
Oh, Culver's is.
Believe it or not, it was fucking Long John Silver's. I hate that place. I didn't go there for me.
First off, is Long John Silver's still. Where did you go?
There was one in Liberty.
Whatever the track is on what we're talking about, we're
this ain't it.
This is a new thing. You went to Long John Silver's in Liberty.
We were in Liberty.
Didn't even know Long John Silver's was a thing.
Still. Yeah, they have two left in the metro area, I believe. One is in Liberty and one is off
Shawnee
Mission Parkway.
There's only two left because they suck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're atrocious.
Okay. Is it an A&W double?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, then I'm okay with it. But dude, the A&W. Dude, keg root beer?
We go through the drive-through. We get one little order. It's nothing crazy.
What'd you order?
Fish and hush puppies and fries. Like it's their standard shit.
Okay.
Nothing special.
How long's the line when you get to the?
We're the only car in the line, and they tell us to go ahead and pull around. And by the time we get to our order, there's two other cars behind us. Right.
By the time you get up to pay.
By the time we pay.
Okay, and now two more cars.
And now two cars are behind us, and they say, "Go ahead and pull out. We'll have it out ready in a minute."
Okay.
So we pull around, and we wait. And next thing we know, there's another car sitting next to us, and we're waiting. And next thing we know, there's a third car sitting next to us, and we're all fucking waiting. And it's like
fryer down.
So then they bring out all three of our food at the exact same time.
Yeah, because I guarantee. Like, let's be honest. You do not want fish that's been fried and sat for 40 minutes.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Well, so, finally, Daniel, like, I'm not kidding you. We were waiting for like 15 minutes. It was a long time at a fast food place. For a fast food place, right? And so then we go inside.
But okay.
We go inside, and the first two orders are sitting there under a heat lamp, and they're working on the. They're just not bringing them out because they wanted to walk out of the building one time.
That's just lazy.
Yes. And so that's what sparked the comment of like, so this is like a subtle shift.
You have to, when you make those comments, you have to put specifics in there.
No, because you want to see where everyone else's mind is at. Right?
Well,
remember fast food used to be that you sat there until you got your stuff.
McDonald's was the first ones to do that.
They never had you pull around. And, yeah, and who pioneered the pull around was the employees.
I thought you were going to say pull around.
No. The employees pioneered it because the employees started getting graded on how many people they could get through the drive-thru at once. And so they started sending you around the corner so that they could get more people technically through the drive-thru, even though they're stacking up unsatisfied orders.
How do you know that?
No, this is a thing.
How do you know that? That's why I'm asking. How do you know that?
There's videos out there where they have sensors in front of the pickup window, the number two window. They have sensors. And they'll wave things in front of the sensor to tell it the person's going around or going through or whatever.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And they get graded on how fast, like this is the public information.
I know, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Like, how did you know that? Did you look this up after?
No, I've known this
You've
for years.
You've just known this? Okay.
For years. And so
I gotta get some context.
They
here,
slide
buddy.
This in on us that, oh, now you pull around. Okay, cool. And the first couple times it was the pull around thing, it was like, okay, maybe you had the weird milkshake that they had to custom make. And so, yes, other people are waiting on their food behind you. But now the pull around has turned into the standard way to do things.
I wouldn't say that. Like when you go to
every like
they all have it, but when I go to other than when you go to Culver's, you always pull around because they make their shit right when you order.
Yes, yeah.
So but like
Culver's is made after you order it.
So like McDonald's, the only time I will ever eat McDonald's, I hate fast food, is mm-hmm. like in the morning if it's like 9 and I haven't eaten or something and I'm dying, I'll get a sausage egg McMuffin.
Yeah.
I've never had to wait at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Ever.
We always, like the one here is, and so part of it's the setup. They have two lanes to order, but only one lane to pay. And then after you pay, you go to the next window and then you pick up your food. So they can take twice as many orders as they can serve at once, right?
I wouldn't say that, but because they usually it's like one person orders, that person goes, the next person orders.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they go back and forth. They're not taking two orders and giving out one, essentially.
Right, right. They put the two lines in there to help like keep the line down and things like that.
They have two lines in there so that it makes it look like they're not as busy as they are.
Maybe, probably.
I think that's why.
But then...
Except for Chick-fil-A, because that place is always fucking busy.
Like our order thing here for the McDonald's closest to us, every single time you go, it's pull around. They give you your drinks, pull around.
Which one? What are we back on?
South 7.
Still McDonald's? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the one I go to.
And so then...
I've never had to wait there.
They'll come...
And I hate McDonald's. I'd love to trash McDonald's. I've never had to wait there.
They'll maybe go there for dinner. Maybe breakfast is different.
I have money. I'm not going to McDonald's for dinner.
Yeah, true.
I shouldn't say I have money. I have respect for my own personal health.
Yeah.
How about that?
So... but they'll always have you come around, and then lately the pull around thing has turned into a shit show because then they walk out empty handed and they ask you what you ordered.
Never seen that.
And then they walk out with five bags and they're trying to figure out whose bag's whose.
I'd just say whatever that is mine.
And
I'll take them all.
Right. It's just a shit show. So what started as a little convenience thing for the one-off order has evolved into it's now a four-step process. You're going to order at the kiosk. You're going to pay at window one. You're going to pick up your drinks at window two. You're going to pull around the building, and then you're going to wait for your food in stall four.
Stall four.
Right? And
that's great.
It's just a weird, like, what started as a convenience for everybody else in line has turned into the business abusing everyone else's time. And they've gotten away from the fact that, like they're doing all of this so that they don't have to make your food as fast. And then they try to say, well, it's the way we've done things, but really all it's done is enable them to make the food far slower than they used to.
I think a lot of it also is the fact that they were food waste was so bad because food was so cheap.
Yeah, maybe.
That it forced them to make it fresher and not hold 10 burgers. Like, if you ever watched the old McDonald's or remember going to the old McDonald's, like, there would be two slide trays. Okay, they don't have them anymore. Mm-hmm. Two metal slide trays with heat lamps. And there'd be 10 burgers on there.
Oh, yeah.
But they were so busy at those times that they didn't wait long.
Yeah.
Can you imagine now, though, them making all of that and then throwing it away with the food prices the way
right.
they are?
Right.
Like, I don't blame them. I'd rather have my food fresh.
Yeah.
And if I gotta wait 15 minutes, I'm never waiting more than 2 minutes for McDonald's because it sucks. If I gotta go to, I love going to Culver's. If I gotta wait 10 minutes, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Culver's is different. Like, that's their system. You've never gone to Culver's and not had them put the Post-it note on your window with a number on it and tell you to go park and they go find you.
So if it's their system and other people are now doing the same thing, is it a problem?
Well, it's different because at McDonald's,
you're accustomed to it being done immediately?
No. At McDonald's, they use it as an excuse for, because like they still fuck your order up. They still have no clue who you are.
Of course.
They still have no clue what you ordered, right?
Yeah.
And so at McDonald's, it's an excuse for bad systems within the store. At Culver's, it's a good system.
Yeah, but standing off the outside, if you didn't know any of that or think any of that, and you had to wait the exact same amount of time, does it really matter?
Yeah, so like...
Does it?
Yes. Yeah.
If you don't know that it's them abusing the system, and you have to go to McDonald's and pull around and wait 10 minutes, and you have to go to Culver's and pull around and wait 10 minutes, does it matter?
Yes.
Why?
The Culver's, the way that their system is...
I just said, if you don't know the way their system works, and you have never been to a McDonald's, and you've never been to a Culver's, and you go there, and you pull up and you pay, mm-hmm. you pull up and you get your drinks, and you go around in mm-hmm. both of them, and you wait 10 minutes, does it really matter?
Yes. Because
no.
in Culver's, the way their system works, you can tell that's their system. They put the Post-it... like. The moment they open the door, they're putting a Post-it note on your window. They've already recorded the number of that Post-it note to your order. So that they've already attached it to the order. It's like you can tell.
So if McDonald's started doing that.
If McDonald's started Post-it notes and add a little more. Or if McDonald's didn't send a random employee out empty-handed and asked for your order again.
Yeah.
That's how you can tell it's a broken system at McDonald's.
No, I agree. That's so not like, the argument. The argument is if McDonald's started putting the sticker on there and then McDonald's came out with their hands
wouldn't
with
be a
food,
problem.
That's what I'm saying. It wouldn't be a problem.
Wouldn't be a problem because...
It's not the problem that you have to pull around. The problem is that they're not telling you, you're not used to it, and then when you go around, they're coming out with no food.
Yes.
It's not the pull around.
And then did you see all the comments where like... service members have worked in McDonald's?
No.
Like plumbers and electricians?
This is going to sound horrible. I only fuck with my friends on Facebook.
Yeah, I know.
Like when I see, you're not the only one.
Yeah.
Like when my other friends are like putting stuff on there, and I'll just kind of, okay, yeah. I'll pick up the bat here and I'll just, you know.
So there's McDonald's employees that will just tell you that they do it out of laziness.
Of course they do.
They do it just to fuck. Like, you'll be the only person in line, and they'll tell you to pull around. And it's like, dude, they're fucking... I ordered a drink and small fries.
Let me ask you a very realistic question. Do you think that winners work at McDonald's?
No, but winners design the systems at McDonald's, and winners should manage McDonald's.
So the winners that design McDonald's are no longer... above the design of McDonald's. We've known that for a long
time.
Right. It's not nearly as great as it used to be. It's a shit show.
Yeah. But like, if my kid wanted a job, I would much rather him get a job at Culver's than McDonald's because McDonald's is...
It's because they have structure at Culver's.
Yes.
Yeah, they have no managers at McDonald's.
It's
because they don't want to pay their fucking employees.
And the structure is guidance to make good employees, whereas McDonald's... The
Agreed.
Systems are failing, and it creates lazy employees.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A is the same way, which is so weird.
Chick-fil-A is amazing structure.
It's so weird because this literally happened to you at a Long John Silver's.
Yeah.
We're somehow talking about McDonald's.
Yeah.
Well, it happens at McDonald's all the time. Oh, it was just Long John was the catalyst. But like, so Chick-fil-A's answer.
I still can't believe you went to fucking Long John Silver's.
Chick-fil-A's answer when they get crazy busy. What do? They send little minions out there. And I say minions because in the inclement weather, they wear those little tent things. Have you seen those?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Oh, man.
They wear these yellow, so you know those little like hooped tents? That if you twist them right, they fold up and collapse into a circle?
Yeah.
Okay. So have you ever seen the portable, the temporary porta-johns that you can use at like tailgating?
Yeah.
It's a tall, slender tent that only holds one person standing up.
Yeah.
It's got a bucket in there like you can
chip and piss in. Yeah. Yeah, bucket with a fucking seat on it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
they sell them at fucking Bass Pro.
Okay, so Chick-fil-A has those, but they're only a third as tall. And they have shoulder straps,
sticks out?
And they're standing in them, and they look like little minions, and it keeps them out of the rain.
Are they yellow?
Yes. Yes. They look like little minions.
I had no idea.
But what they do is they put two minions
you
out
eat
there.
Too much fast food, bro. Yeah.
I just examine customer service a lot. But they put two little minions out there.
Oh, my God.
Five cars before the order window.
And take orders.
And they take your order.
I've seen them taking orders.
Five cars before you get to the window.
Yeah, but I've never seen them wearing the thing.
Well, they only wear it in inclement weather.
Yeah.
But now they're taking your order ahead so that your order's ready to pick up at the pickup window.
Yeah, because they're that fast.
Because that's their structure.
Well, they're efficient.
Right.
Yes.
And so that's what I'm saying. That's where McDonald's gets the highlight because everyone else has a structure and a system to provide fast, efficient service, and you're able to see that as a customer, and you feel like confident that it's good, right?
Yeah.
Whereas McDonald's, this is a fucking crutch. It's a handicap. It's a Band-Aid.
Yeah,
it's like our structure sucks.
Yeah.
You have to pull around because we don't have your food ready.
Yeah, and let's talk about what should happen. You shouldn't go to McDonald's or Long John Silver's.
I don't.
And you fucking know that.
I don't go there anymore. I've stopped like
I saw you month ago on a Zoom call eating when you were dirty bulking.
That was 2 months ago.
Okay.
I haven't eaten McDonald's for a month.
Okay, but that and it wasn't a one-time thing.
No, you're right.
It was like every week.
Now also
three times a week.
I don't go.
Disgusting.
I don't want to go. Like I won't even take the kids. If they want to go to McDonald's, I'm like, fuck it, you take them, babe, because I don't want to sit through that.
We will let Layla get chicken nuggets like once every 3 weeks, but it's a strict, we hardly go there because I hate it. I hate all fast food. The only one I will eat.
Your daughter's a prisoner.
She is a prisoner.
We allow her to get chicken nuggets.
She is a prisoner. She is so weird. She will.
And, you can have chicken nuggets 14 times this year.
I know that she's.
Dad, can I have a glass of water? No, you had one on Thursday.
I say no drink milk a lot. No, drink some milk. You know what's crazy? She will not drink. She's 12. She will not drink anything but milk or water.
Yeah, Grant won't drink anything carbonated.
Yeah, Layla will not. She will not drink it.
Yeah.
She will drink milk or water.
Gatorade.
And that's it. She won't drink
juice.
Gatorade.
Yeah.
She won't drink juice. She won't drink any of that shit. And that's on her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, no, it's awful.
Yep.
No. I tried to give her Sprite one day. She's throwing up. She's like, no. No. I want water. Okay, have some water. No, she said she wanted milk. I said, no, you can't drink milk. You're throwing up. Then stop. It's curdled. You can't, we don't, no. She, what I was going to say is, I know she's spoiled and I know that I have maybe messed up in this one little area. Because she will want nuggets or something junky or whatever. And I'll be like, no, we're going to Texas Roadhouse. And we'll go to Roadhouse and she won't eat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when I was a kid, like we had mayonnaise. It was Wonder Bread, mayonnaise, and a piece of cheese.
Yep.
And her spoiled ass won't eat Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Wow.
We only know what we
like
know.
I fucked up somewhere. Yep. Like, I messed something up.
Perception is reality.
Ugh, perception is reality.
Yep.
God. Anyways, that's a look into our Facebook lives just for fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you're right. I mean, it is. It society as a whole.
I had two fast food related posts yesterday because the other one was talking about, we talked about it on the show. It was about not tipping at Subway.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, dude.
Yeah.
I love the look when I hit no and they can see it.
Yeah.
And I just look them right in the eye. I look them dead in the eye.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what?
The guy making my hamburger at McDonald's doesn't get a tip. Why should I give you a tip?
Yeah. When I spend 4 days making the sheet metal for your house, yeah, and then I go install it for 3 days, yeah, I'm not getting a tip.
Yeah.
And I'm working.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a sit-down restaurant and it's nice.
Yeah, if you like provided a level of service that was exceptional and over and above and beyond, then yes, I'll tip.
Yeah, and I will say this. If I go to a place and their service sucks, that bitch gets a dollar. Dude, yeah, or chick, I don't care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If they suck, they get almost next to nothing.
Yep.
The reason you get a tip is because you were awesome and you did great at your job and I didn't have to wait around like a jackass.
Yep.
That's why you get the extra money.
Yeah.
Sorry, you yep suck at your job. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, tipping culture is crazy.
It's weird.
It sucks.
So.
Anyways, you want to talk about something good?
You want to actually get into something now that we're 20 minutes in?
No.
Okay, well, we're going to.
We do this every week. We go 20, 30 minutes, and then we actually talk about something.
Yeah.
So hey, boys and girls, it's David. Mitch and I started TradeWinds to help trades professionals start their business, or if they've already started, to get it to a healthy and profitable level. It's training, it's coaching, it's mentoring, all in one. Click on the link in the description to find out a little bit more. There's a promotional video you can watch when you go to the website. If you fill out the contact form, I'll even make Mitch call you.
I want to talk about a video.
You sure you don't want to just end the podcast right now?
No.
20 minutes?
Nah.
I said they need to be shorter. You yeah said, totally no. Fuck off. Yeah. Dave.
A whole podcast
jackass
about nothing.
First off, Seinfeld is a giant show about nothing, and they made $1 billion.
Yeah. It's about nothing, but Seinfeld's about everything at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so my mom actually sent me this video of a Duke University professor named Aaron Dinnan. And he puts quite a few videos out on social media, but he's got one. The video's got like 7.5 million views. He has a class. The title of his class, for all intents and purposes, this university professor seems pretty legit. His class is Learning to Fail. That's the name of his class. It's a college class called Learning to Fail.
I should have asked you this before the show. Do you have any idea what he actually teaches?
Learning to Fail. It's an entrepreneurship class.
I know that. I'm saying, I wonder what his actual structure is.
Oh, I have no clue.
Like how he teaches that.
Well, you kind of get a window into that with this video. So Duke University closed the university at noon one day due to inclement weather. And they announced, they sent a message out to all the students saying, you know, effective noon and beyond, we're closed due to inclement weather. Well, this Professor Dinnan, his class starts at 11:45, and the name of the class is Learning to Fail, right?
Okay.
And he has 21 students in his class, enrolled in his class, and he says, we're going to do an experiment today. School's technically closed from noon and beyond. My class is supposed to start at 11:45. I could have sent out a message saying class is canceled, but I didn't because I want to see who shows up. And so he filmed it.
Yeah,
and
I saw it before the show.
He had 4 students show up out of 21, and he asked them all, why'd you show up? And the first student says, you're my favorite teacher, and you're my favorite class.
Yeah,
I
love this
to
class
be there. Another student said, because I thought you would do something
the
like
last
this.
The last one said, yeah, because I thought you'd do something like this.
Yeah. One of them said, 15 minutes is better than nothing. And so he was like, all right, consuming knowledge. 15 yeah minutes more knowledge than what you had before, right? And eventually he didn't get anybody in trouble. Like he
no,
talks to the four.
Not.
He doesn't get in any trouble for not showing up. But he talked about in life, there are so many times where we have no clear right or wrong answer. Was it right or wrong to show up to class? Nobody knows. Was it right or wrong to skip class? There's no real right answer to that, right?
Yeah.
Class starts at 11:45. School's canceled from noon and beyond. Like,
yeah.
Do you go or do you not go, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would assume that class is canceled.
It's canceled, right.
Like, I would be like, okay, that falls in the window. It's going to be canceled.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a natural thought.
And so he used it as an example to say, like, okay, these 4 students are going to do really well in life. Because here, when they were given no clear choice of right or wrong, they still did the hard thing, right? When we have the option to take the easy way out, a lot of times we do. And those who still stay the course and do the hard thing. And I'm not saying do something unnecessarily hard just to say it's hard. What I'm saying, like,
what you're saying is when you go above and beyond the norm.
Yeah.
That's what you mean.
What I'm saying is like there's a lot of guys that are like, take the stairs, not the elevator. I do things harder than they need to be just because that's who I am. Like, that's kind of bullshit. If there's an elevator there and it's faster, I'm going to take it. Right? Now, yeah. Let's say the elevator's out. That doesn't mean I just give up on my journey to whatever floor I needed to go on and not go. Like, no. Now I take the stairs.
Yeah.
Right? Some people would. Have you ever seen the commercial where it's, I don't know if it's a commercial or what it is, but it might be a like a TV ad or something for a consulting company. But these three people are going up an escalator. And it's a really long escalator, okay? So it's not one that just goes to the next floor. It's like a two or three floor escalator.
Okay.
They get halfway up the escalator and the thing shuts down and they kind of stop. And then they're all just standing there.
No, I've never seen that.
And they start bitching to each other like, ha, just my luck. Of course this would happen today. I'm already running late. And they just stand there. And then they start hollering, somebody help! Somebody! And then they like sit down, like it shows them 20 minutes later and they've like sat down. It's like, dude, just go up the stairs, you know? But this is how people go.
That's so dumb. Like, no one's doing that. No one's, people will stop and they will bitch and they will complain and they will think that they're going to get something for free, but they're going to walk their ass up the stairs. 99 out of 100 people are walking up the stairs.
Correct. But what they're highlighting is the lady that
I get it.
The lady that leaves her house at 7:03 and then stops to get the coffee on the way to work
and then
tells boss, sorry, yeah. I wasn't here at 7. Traffic was crazy.
Or the escalator quit working.
Working, so I had to take the stairs.
Oh, my God. You know what? Maybe plan on being at work early.
Yeah. So there's another video where this HR lady is highlighting. She records all of this stuff. And she like creates this montage video of all of the reasons people didn't show up to a job interview. And it's like,
I've actually seen that.
There's a girl that's like, yeah. The lady's like, 20, are you
in their like mid to late 20s? All of the younger applicants.
They're younger applicants. But there's one, she calls this girl and she was like, hey, your interview was supposed to start 5 minutes ago and you're not here. And the girl's like, yeah, the escalator was broken. Well, we have stairs.
And she says, I
didn't want to go up the stairs.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
You're out.
So there's the person that wouldn't take the stairs, yeah, right?
You're out.
There's a whole bunch of other like piss poor excuses on that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
But the cool lesson with this professor's video is when there is gray area, when there is no clear choice as to right or wrong, what are you doing? Are you doing things to move the event forward, or are you using the circumstance as an excuse to relax, take your foot off the gas, take your eye off the prize, and admit defeat, essentially?
Yeah.
Right? And so prime examples of how this it's
a good lesson.
The reason this is important is because this is why we were talking about the ambiguously gay duo earlier, is because navigating ambiguity is what separates successful people from non-successful people. And this is employees, this is entrepreneurs, this is entrepreneurs, this is anybody at any level, this is mothers, fathers, anything.
Yeah.
Navigating ambiguity.
You're trying to be successful at.
And navigating ambiguity happens every day in your life. Every single day. Literally, after we had that shitty experience at Long John Silver's yesterday, we're driving home, and I've got my almost 16-year-old son driving, and he was like, I don't know the speed limit on this road. How fast should I go?
You're telling me that F-350 doesn't tell you?
We weren't in the F-350.
You tell me that Lightning don't tell you?
We weren't in the Lightning.
Were you in his red truck?
Well, his truck won't tell him anyway. We were in Daniel's Jeep.
That you're telling me that $70,000 Jeep won't tell you what the speed limit is on the road?
No. I mean, it might if you have the navigation on or something, but... Another
topic for another day. Go ahead.
Okay. But I said, you know, when you're in neighborhoods, when you don't know the speed limit, it's 25 or less. And when you're on public roadways and you don't know the speed limit, it's 35.
Yeah, it's 35.
Right? And I said, that doesn't mean that's like get out of jail. Like, you still might be breaking the law. But when you don't know the speed limit, the safe speed to go on a public roadway is 35 until you see a speed limit sign.
Yeah.
And you might be going 10 under. It might be a speed limit 40 or 45, whatever. Might be 25 and you're going 10 over.
Yeah.
But at 35, it's a relatively safe speed until you find the speed limit. And ambiguity is everywhere. And those who navigate it the best are the most successful. And those who navigate it the best are often thought of as being incredibly intelligent. But it's not. They're just focused on the goal. So another prime example of this. We're in the home service business world, right?
Business.
One of the classic things about home service business is when you make a sale, you want to get it installed as fast as possible.
Yeah, because buyers, it gives them less time to have remorse or find someone else or whatever.
They can have buyer's remorse before they've ever spent the money. The moment you give them a price and then set their install date a week out from now, they're literally spending that entire week seeing if they can find it cheaper.
At least a couple of days.
Or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so the faster you get it in, now here's the crazy thing. You get it installed and they don't even care about it. They don't even care how much it costs anymore because now it's in the past. It's a thing that's over and done with and it doesn't matter.
They've moved on instantly.
And so believe it or not, if you have a slow time to install, and this is, we talk about this in Tradewinds all the time. The guys that brag about, oh, I'm booked a week and a half out, that's not something to brag about. Because if you're booked a week and a half out and you sell a big job today and you can't get to it for a week and a half, that job's, the likelihood that job is going to cancel just magnified.
It goes up
a ton.
It goes up every day.
Yes.
The percentage goes up every day. If it's a week out,
yeah,
every day it goes up. If it's 3 days out, it goes up for those 3 days.
And here's what happens in the customer's home that we don't see. What happens in the customer's home is if you schedule that job a week out, now it's still something in their future. So it's still something on their anxiety radar.
Yep.
What, it could be a low anxiety thing, but it's still something in their near future.
It doesn't matter. They're thinking, whether they have anxiety or not, they're thinking about it all day.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I got that water heater could blow at any minute. Holy shit, I'm so worried about it.
We always think about the things we have to do, right? And so it's no different than like when the weather's inclement and your car needs gas. You're thinking about, like, I got to stand out in the cold and pump gas. Oh, it's going to be warmer this afternoon. I'll get it this afternoon.
Yeah. Right?
Like, little things like that. There's just subconscious things that just happen.
Dude, me with my truck. I still haven't bought a truck. I'm driving these trucks. I'm thinking about it every day. I'm like, am I going to offer that for this? Am I going to get this? Like, it doesn't cause me anxiety or worry, but it's still taking up my bandwidth.
Well, you don't.
And it's still at the forefront. And if it was one of those things where it was my water heater's going out and Mitch tells me he can't be there for a week and a half, after 3 days of still thinking about it,
I'm calling somebody else
and be like, hey, dude, can you do this today?
Yeah.
And he comes out and gives me the same price. Say he gives me a price that's $100 more, but he can do it right now.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
So exactly. That I don't have to fucking worry about it. It's off my plate. It's out of my bandwidth.
Right.
Do it.
And you haven't bought a truck yet because you don't want to get taken advantage of on the price. The day you buy a truck, how much you paid for it is gone. It's out the window.
Yeah.
You're in your truck.
Yeah. You don't care.
You don't think about it anymore.
Yeah.
And so.
Mine's less money and more. I can't decide what I want, but yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
And so navigating the, like, I've been focusing on my guys on this hardcore about staying focused on the job until it's sold and then staying focused on the job through the sale until it's completed and paid for. And there's gray area in there, right?
Yeah.
There's no clear answers. Yeah. So like one of my guys went to a customer's house where they wanted two new shower valves and we have to cut through the fiberglass and do it through the front side of the shower.
Ugh, that's the worst.
And this customer wanted they wanted the standard Moen valve, but they wanted unique special trim. And so they
special trim that will go on a PosiTemp it has to be like a Moen troll.
Yeah, valve? No, like a PosiTemp trim. Okay. And so the customer wanted to provide everything. And so my guy was like, all right, order the stuff and we'll come out next week and do it. And gave him a price and the guy agreed on the schedule, everything. It's still a job that got punted out a week, regardless of why.
Yeah, regardless of why, but man, if they knew what the trim level was, it could have been like, I could get it today.
Well, nobody had it in town today. It was they had
it's
to order
special
it.
Shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we punted the whole job out. Well, the guy.
Are you tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? The Void Podcast has negotiated exclusive rates for the Void listeners. This program's tailored for trade businesses like yours. And if you're using House Call Pro, switch and you can expect to save $80 for every 10,000 you process per month. Don't let high processing fees drain your profits. Visit empowerpayments.com/thevoid or call us at 913-423-1265 now and unlock your savings.
Decides he can find it and get it done cheaper somewhere else, and so he ends up canceling. And so we were talking, like, what are some things that we could have done to solve this problem? And my guys actually came up, I had this in my head, I didn't say this, my guys actually came up with this on their own, and that is, why didn't you take two shower valves and chrome trim off your truck and put it in?
Install them and say when the
install
trim comes
them today,
in.
When the trim get the job in, done, we'll get paid it, yeah. for. When your trim comes in, you call me, I'll swing back by.
Yeah.
I'll take my chrome trim off, yeah. I'll put your trim back on, and then I'm going to take your valve bodies to replenish mine.
Yeah,
and so it's still customer supplied valve bodies, and it's one extra trip, which we were going to have to make that extra trip anyway yeah. to go out there and do the work, right? Yeah.
And you know that from your new construction background. Like I'm the same way. Yeah. Everything had a valve and it had chrome trim, and then whatever you wanted to add on, you just add it on.
You swap it out later, right?
Yeah.
And so
it's good they thought about that,
right? And so next time somebody wants to do that, that's the play, yeah. right? But that's that ambiguity thing that a lot of people get hung up on, and. We talked about this on the last show about leading with value and going into a home saying, what can we do to wow people? What can we do? Like, I'm going to go into the home and I'm like, plumbing comes so easily to me because I've done it for so long. I'm not worried about, am I going to be able to solve their plumbing issue? I'm going into their home thinking, how am I going to wow them? And I'm literally watching and looking for things that I can impress them with. Right. And ways that I can add extra value that doesn't cost me anything, but that is received well amongst them. And so that's things like adjusting the storm door so it doesn't slam or it doesn't buffer forever and take forever to close. Changing light bulbs, doing other things like that, right?
Yeah.
Bringing the trash cans up from the curb, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, extras.
Those are all those free things, right? I do the same thing in the sales world. Everything I say is to get me closer to a sale. And yeah. so if I give this guy a price to install two valves and he says yes, I'm not going to walk away from that and say, yeah, I'm just going to come back in a week. It's like, no, what else can I do to ensure that this stays on the schedule? What else can I do to ensure that we get this money, right?
Yeah.
And so I would have, if I were in that position, I would have said, tell you what, I'll go ahead and install my valves when your shit comes in. Like, I'll put, like, if you don't need these showers, then we'll leave them trimless. And I'll just do the valves, and then whenever your shit comes in, I'll put
your need them.
If you need them,
change it out. No
then
worries.
I'll put the chrome trim on for now, and you can use it for a week, and then when your stuff comes in, we'll swap it out, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, all of those ambiguous moments in sales, those gray area things, if you're constantly focused on what's the end result is I make the sale, and I put the plumbing in, and the customer's happy, and they pay us. Cool. What can I do to guarantee that's going to happen?
Yeah.
I want to keep more in my control, and I want to leave less to uncontrollable variables.
Yeah. It's so weird too, because like the older you get, the more experience you have, the more natural that is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like your guys that have never worked new construction would never have thought about that.
Right.
Like it took them a while, they had to mull it over. I wonder how, or this, I guess this is me asking you. How do you, or how would you train yourself to be more open to other scenarios in those situations? You know what I mean? Like the only thing I can think of is experience. And if you don't have that experience, your guys have 10,000 hours of experience. Mm-hmm. They are dedicated plumbers. They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That guy didn't think of it in that moment. Now, and I'm not saying all of them would think that way, but.
Well, keep in mind, he knew that the standard Positemp valve can have any Positemp trim go on it. It's not like he didn't know that.
No, I know, but he didn't put the two and two together that he
in his
do
mind,
that.
He was quoting customer supplied pricing, and so in his mind, it never clicked that I can loan him shit off my truck.
No, I know. I 100% understand that.
Yeah.
How do we, as people, like open our brain, open ourselves up to that expanse? Does that make sense?
The
like,
way you very, do that.
Like the only thing I can think of is experience and being a good salesperson and being a person that is very open to change and things that aren't of the norm.
So that
It's a complicated question. I know that.
I don't think experience has anything to do with it, because ignorance is bliss in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and but so experience opens your mind to, instead of I've only known 3 situations, I know 50 situations. And one of those 50 could fit into that scenario or a scenario.
But what I'm saying, like, experience helps with performing the repair. Experience doesn't help with facilitating the sale of the repair. Okay. And what I mean is, everybody is so different that the thing that you have to wrap your head around is, like, staying diligent to the process of what can I do to ensure this job doesn't cancel.
No, I know, but it doesn't have to do with the sale necessarily. It has to do with if you don't see a way out, mm-hmm. then you can't even make the sale.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But how do you see that way out?
That's in general,
and that comes from experience.
Well, that's just from the dedication to every job's different, and what can I do to ensure this happens on this job?
Yeah,
right.
And I understand that. It's a very dickhead question, and it's very open ended because there are no right answers. It's just I bring it up so that maybe people that are listening will start thinking about things in that way. You have to be able to think outside of the box. How do we think outside of the box? You have to be willing to think outside of the box.
Yeah.
You have to go into that van. I'm just using plumbing as an example. You have to go into that van and look around and go, what can I do right now?
Right.
Is there any way that I can make this happen right now?
Yeah. So companies that own an excavator. Sewer jobs like to cancel all the time because sewer jobs are a big, heavy ticket item. And sewer jobs are something, I mean, that's a big, like, most people have never had to replace their sewer.
No.
And so when you do, it's something you talk about. It's something you post about on social media. You talk to your friends about it. And if they're talking about it before you've started the project, then the conversation is, oh my gosh, that's crazy. I know a buddy that got his sewer fixed for $3,000. You need to call that company. Right?
Yeah.
Now, what's funny is,
They don't know what happened on that job.
Right.
Like, who knows?
But what's funny...
10 foot, 50 foot.
Right.
3 foot deep.
Right. All of those questions go away whenever you're having that exact same conversation with your neighbor. And it's like, oh, I just had to have my sewer fixed and it was $7,000. And they're like, oh my gosh, oh, that's crazy. I had a buddy that got it done for 3 years. Must have been really bad. Right? Once it's in the past, everyone's just like, oh, that stinks for you.
Yeah,
but when it's in the future, everyone says that contractor's trying to fuck you.
Well, when it's in their future, you're trying to match a price.
Right.
When it's in the past, even a neighbor will have empathy for you and say, oh, it must have been horrible.
Yeah.
That's why. People will immediately think, I don't want them to feel bad if they did get fucked.
Yeah.
That's really why.
This is identical to HVAC companies in the summertime when your AC quits working.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, uncontrollably, they're booked out for 3 or 4 days.
Yep.
And you got to go 3 or 4 days with no AC. Prior to somebody thinking outside the box, everyone was just like, well, you're fucked for 3 or 4 days. And then somebody went and made the investment and bought a whole bunch of window units.
We did that. We've talked about this.
Yes,
we did that in Warrensburg.
I know. Like, some guy came up with that idea years ago and it spread like wildfire because it's fucking smart. Is like,
yeah, it works.
How do I ensure that this AC customer doesn't cancel on me because I can't get to their install for 3 or 4 days? Well, all I got to do is keep their house cool for these 3 or 4 days, and then they'll love me.
The master bedroom has to be cold, and the living room has to be as cold as it can be.
You really
only have to have 2 per house. Doesn't matter how big the fucking house is.
Right.
If those two places can be temperature controlled, they're happy.
But what I'm saying is,
for those of you that are listening to that have HVAC companies,
what I'm saying is, where guys go wrong with this is they see examples like this and they expect somebody should tell them all of these examples.
Yeah.
And that's the wrong way to go about it.
Of course.
The right way to go about it is to recognize, okay, this was a place where somebody thought outside the box and they were in an ambiguous situation that was no right or wrong answer. But yet, I don't control all the variables, and so if I want this thing to have the outcome that I want, I gotta do something, right? And in the AC situation, that something is free leasing of window units. In the shower valve situation, that's we'll put in our valves and then we'll swap it out later, type of thing, right? If you're in an excavation situation and you own equipment, you go ahead and deliver that equipment the day you sell the job, and you may even take a scoop or two out of the ground. You've started the job,
yep.
right? You dig a big enough hole that requires safety fence around it, yeah. and then you pull off.
Yeah.
And that helps ensure that that job's not going to cancel between tonight and tomorrow or whatever.
Yeah.
And so there's all kinds of things out there where you can add extra value. There's all kinds of things out there where you can change the variables to ensure that you are going to succeed. But it all starts with your desire to navigate ambiguity. And if you need a black and white world, you're going to, that's a mediocre world. An average world is black and white. I'm told what to do. I'm told not what. For instance, driving down the highway, speed limit sign says 65. What if a crash yesterday took that sign out? Well, there's no speed limit sign. How do I know what success looks like on this highway? Well, experience.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll just drive with the flow of traffic if you don't know the speed limit, right?
Do
like,
that a lot.
You're not just going to go 90 and be like, well, there wasn't a sign. You know what I mean? Like,
no, so that's irresponsible.
You make an ethical decision to drive with the flow of traffic until you know the speed limit.
Or you use good judgment.
Yes.
To carry you through.
Yeah.
Sometimes good judgment and common sense goes a freaking long ways.
Right. Right. And so, like, there's a lot of situations out there where we make the situation harder on ourselves because we were too stubborn to stay in the black and white scenario. So,
or the opposite of that, we're too stubborn to get out of the black and white scenario. Well, my boss says I have to sell X, Y, and Z.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or just to use your speed limit example. Well, I was doing 75 instead of 65 and I avoided that crash.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What the real lesson is, don't get stuck inside of a box regardless of what it is.
All right, so you've newly started your company and you're trying to pinch pennies. However, you don't realize the biggest thing that's hurting you right now is not gathering all of your information into one spot and making it super efficient for you to use. So the answer is Field Pulse. It gets you off of paper tickets. It gets you off of all of that crazy office work at the end of the day and reconciling all that stuff. And it lets you organize everything with ease. It puts it all into the computer. It actually puts it all into the cloud. So it's not even putting it on your computer. And it lets you organize your customers. It lets you organize all of your service calls. Heck, it'll even route you to your service call. And the best part is, even after all of that, you'll probably realize about a 100% growth in your business just in the first year of using Field Pulse. So if you'd like to check out Field Pulse and see what great looks like, click on the link in the description of this show.
Right.
Always be looking for another opportunity to make something happen.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lessons like this. There's examples of this everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like I hate self checkout.
I do too.
But
I'm not paying the same to do it myself.
Right. If I go to the grocery store and the regular checkout lines are a mile long and I'm in a hurry,
I'm not going to,
I value my time to some extent. Right. And so I'm not going to just out of principle go stand in the long line and cost myself time. Now, if I don't have anywhere to be, I might.
Yeah. If I don't have anywhere I have to be, I wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the lady will come up to me and they'll be like, you know, you can do this self-checkout. I'm like, nah.
Right.
I got to bag my own shit. Why should I have to go through all that effort? If they wanted to really do that, they should give you a 5% discount.
Yeah.
That's what they should really
do. Or free grocery bags. Like a lot of places charge for bags. Well, maybe if we give free bags out at self-checkout, but we charge for them at the regular checkout, now you're incentivized, you're compensated to some degree to use self-checkout, right?
And if you go, we're getting so off topic. Like if I go to Price Chopper and I don't want to say flirt because most of them are older ladies, but if you're nice to them, how are you, this and that, blah, 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 and then something rolls through that they have a coupon for, they're like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
I got the, and they will literally save you money while doing the work for you.
Yeah.
It just,
yeah.
I'm with you. I hate the self-checkout.
Well, so this navigating ambiguity thing goes through a lot of topics that we've talked about in recent shows, okay?
Yeah, they've been grouped together here the last month.
Well, it goes to the McDonald's example that we started the show with.
Long John Silver's.
I know, but we were targeting McDonald's with it. But McDonald's allows the ambiguity to be the excuse. well, the Fry machine's down, or the McFlurry machine's down, or whatever else, which the McFlurry thing is a whole nother.
We're not going to talk about thing. Trump fixing the McFlurry. If he wants to get reelected, he holds on to that for 3 years and then somehow fixes that McFlurry machine.
So the McFlurry machine's not broken. It's the process to clean it is a really long process. And so the employees will tell you it's broken because they don't want to have to clean it.
I thought they couldn't get parts for it.
No.
I thought the whole deal was they couldn't get parts for it. And that doesn't make any sense either.
There are tons of videos out there where somebody goes, they get the ice cream and they want it whipped up in the McFlurry. And the lady's like, no, it's broken. It doesn't work. And so the guy literally waits for her to leave and he walks around the counter, lifts up the little plastic slider, clips his little spoon onto the end of it. Works just fine. It's just they didn't want to clean it.
Which, that's so weird to me because, okay, totally off topic. My father-in-law used to work for Coke, okay? Well, then they decided they weren't going to have employees, so they made them all sub out, okay? So Coca-Cola subbed his company, Bevco, okay? And they would go to all the McDonald's and all that. They had a working schedule. Mm-hmm. You ever wonder why McDonald's drinks taste so much better than everyone else's? It's just like Quick Trip. They have those lines serviced and cleaned all the time. Mm-hmm. How the hell are they paying for that at McDonald's, but they're not paying to have that fucking McFlurry machine fucking cleaned?
Well,
what the hell is that about?
Because that's a corporate decision versus an on-site employee decision. And when the on-site employees are allowed to make decisions like that...
Is every McFlurry machine broke?
Yes.
So if I'm a franchisee, I buy a McDonald's and I'm like, I'm running the one on South 7. How do I not just go in there once a week and clean that motherfucker?
It has to be done daily.
You're telling me every fucking McDonald's franchisee owner is that lazy?
I mean, some might be on their game and be like, no, ours never breaks.
That's why I asked. You know what I mean? Every one of them, or is it just one?
Most of them have an absentee management system.
You know what my next short's going to be? It's going to be this fucking conversation to see if we can get these things fixed. After I just said I don't go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
But makes no sense.
But that's what I'm saying is like McDonald's employees of all are, they're so processed on everything. You make the fries this way. You take the order this way. You flip the burger this way.
Except for time.
They have those special tools for salting the fries. And like they are all process. And so you take an employee that's only operates out of process, and then you expect them to navigate ambiguity, and they don't know how. And so they fail, right? Yeah. And that's why Culver's has a process for the pull around and we'll bring your order out to you, and McDonald's has no process, and it's fucking chaos. And that's why they walk out and say, what'd you order again? Did you have this? Did you have that?
Did you get a double quarter pounder, dog?
Like I'm just going to...
Do you love me a double quarter pounder?
I'm just going to pull up in the waiting area and then flag the person down and be like, thanks. We've been waiting forever for that, and I'm just going to get free food from now on. It's a lottery. I don't know what food I'm getting.
You're telling me you're not even going to order? You're just going to go
around?
They
don't have any checks and balances. They have none. They literally walk out, and they're like, what did you order again?
Do you want to borrow my GoPro?
Maybe. Get some of those Ray-Ban glasses.
I've got that little
look like Buddy Holly.
I've got that little mount. You can just put it right on your dash.
Yeah.
It would be great.
But that's what I'm saying about, like, That's the navigating ambiguity. There's a whole bunch of ambiguity there, and nobody knows the right way to do things, and they need a process for it. Culver's has a process, and it works great.
Yep.
And and there's confidence whenever they stick that little sticky note on there, because now you know that they've attached your order to that number, and they're not going to walk out here and act like they don't know what the fuck's going on.
It's not a sticky note. Did they quit using the little...
It's a little post-it note.
Did they quit using the numbers?
Yeah. Yeah, they have a little post-it note. They tear a post-it note off, stick it right in your window. So it's a good process.
Dude, I went 2 weeks ago, and it was the little plastic triangle with a number on it, and they stick it on your window edge.
Nope, this is post-it notes. That? Yeah.
I wonder if they quit using them. I'm tired of washing them.
I haven't seen them forever. So, but
you also don't go a lot either.
I mean, I drive a lot. I don't eat. Like, I take my kids to go get something, and then I eat my meal at home.
So weird.
But navigating the ambiguity, like there's... Let me give you another realistic example of navigating ambiguity. When I started a sewer replacement division at a previous company that I was at, they didn't know anything. There were no rules. And so I kind of got to make the rules, right? But yeah. I'm a very analytical person, and I'm going to assess every situation.
You're by the numbers. Yeah. For sure.
And so I started realizing that, okay, my conversion rate on sewers goes up when I print them a nice professional document. And I had an office at this place. So I'd go out and run sewer estimates, and then I'd come back. I'd say, like, I'm going to run to the office and work up an estimate real quick. I'll come right back by.
Yeah.
And so I go to the office, work up an estimate. I drive back to their place and hand them a professionally printed document with three options on it, three different amounts of work, initial by the one that you want, sign on the dotted line. We're going to be out here tomorrow. And our conversion rate went up. So, okay, so conversion rate goes up when we have a professionally printed document. Well, now it became a time constraint for me to go back to the office and print it all up.
Yeah, you got
to
get a laptop in the truck
and so,
or an iPad or whatever.
So I made them buy me a laptop.
This was also...
This was 10 years ago.
I was going to say 10 or 12
years ago. 10 or 12 years ago. So I made them buy me a laptop, and I made them buy me a color inkjet printer. And they were trying to buck the system, and well, the black and white printers are $50 less. Are you sure you need color? And I'm like, motherfucker, these are $8,000 jobs, and you're squabbling over a $50 difference in a printer price. Get the color.
Yeah.
We have a nice colorful logo.
Yeah.
I just got done telling you that when you print them a professionally printed document that they signed, they have trust in us, and now you're already wanting to water it down.
The same. Right. Yeah.
And so they did all that. And now I'm able to print estimates off on the fly. I don't even have to leave their house. I leave their property, right? I walk out of their house, go to my truck, print up the document right there in my truck, bring it in, sign, done.
Yeah.
Now
yeah,
I can
I've signed this. You decide what you want. You sign it.
Yep.
I will have the equipment out here.
That's navigating ambiguity. And lesser people that don't know how to navigate ambiguity would be like, well, I lost it because I had to drive back to the shop and then they wouldn't let me come back to their house, or I lost the job because I just...
Why do you sound like Bullwinkle?
Because that's...
that. But you're right. And it really is. It's not that they don't know how to... what were we talking about?
It's not
that they don't know how to navigate ambiguity. It's that they're lazy.
Well,
let's be honest. A lot of navigating ambiguity and... coming up with solutions is because you don't want to put forth the effort to do so.
Some of it is chosen laziness, and some of it is natural laziness, like naive laziness. Right?
Brain went blank there for a second.
Yeah. No, some of it is chosen laziness. Like, I'm not going to do all this.
Yeah.
They'll buy or they won't, right?
Yeah. It's 100% chosen laziness.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you realize that you could be making more money by selling more jobs just by going and printing off a real life estimate?
Yeah. Another, like
it's insane.
Another example of navigating ambiguity. So my guys are paid on piece rate, right?
Yeah.
So every job has an amount of time associated to that job, and they're paid for that time, not the actual time. Okay. So if a water heater install says 3 hours, they're paid for 3 hours. Even if it takes them 2 hours, they're still paid for three. If it takes them four, they're still paid for three. Just like an automotive tech.
Yeah.
Okay. They have sales bonus options as well. If they sell a certain amount every week, they get a small bonus. If they sell a certain amount every month, they get a small bonus. Okay. And one of the things that we were talking about this morning in our meeting was the ambiguous nature around your sales bonus. In other words, if you are way away from your sales bonus this week, you're not going to hit it, and you have a big sale on Friday, there are guys, instead of staying and doing the work Friday, they will punt that job to next week, trying to hedge their bets to start next week with a good job and better chance to hit the bonus.
How often do they lose that job?
Well, how often does that job cancel because they punted it over the weekend? How often do they do all of that? They didn't hit this week's bonus, and then their performance the rest of next week sucks, and they don't even get next week's bonus, and they risk losing the job for that, right?
And what is... I mean, that is, it's not laziness, but it's inherently lazy.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
It's chosen laziness.
Yeah,
you're trying to scheme the system.
It's literally, your go-getters, people that are successful, will literally take everything that's in front of them and get it done as fast as humanly fucking possible.
Right.
That's just what they do.
Desire to make sure this job happens and doesn't leave and it happens today. And it gets paid today, and all, like, there's that attention to detail, that desire to make that happen, is a trait that is learnable. It's not natural.
Let's be honest. I am not that way. My mom and that side of my family, everyone is lazy.
Yeah.
Okay. I am the only go-getter out of my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
I'm the only one. It's not ingrained into me.
No.
I literally learned it. From 16, because I didn't want to be broke and I wanted my own car, until to this day.
Yeah.
Janine hates it. I will get up and be like, I'm going to go to outside and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this in the barn. I'm going to do this and that. And she's like, why don't you just take a break for a while? I'm like, no, those things need to be done.
Yeah.
Nothing. Those things aren't going to be done unless I do them.
Yeah.
And I'm forcing myself to do. Do you think that I want to get up and do those things? Fuck no.
No.
I want to get up. I want to have coffee. I want to have breakfast. I want to go straight into drinking bourbon and beer and watching baseball out of my porch on my outdoor tee. That's what I want to do.
Right.
But I know that in order to do those things, I have to do all of these other things that I've been doing for years.
Yeah.
And forcing myself to do those.
Yeah.
It isn't a, I'm naturally not that way. Look, man, none of us are really naturally that way. Like Mitch might be because he has ADHD and he's fucking insane, but most of us are not.
Right.
We have to make an open-minded decision to say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be this way, and I'm going to get these things done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that I can be successful. It just, like,
there's,
I don't want to make it seem like it's that simple because it's not, but in reality, it is that simple.
Yeah. There's a book that I referenced in a Facebook post a couple of days ago. I believe the book is called 212 Degrees. 212 degrees Fahrenheit is the temperature.
That's boiling point.
It's the temperature that water turns to steam.
Yeah.
And at 211 degrees, you have hot water.
Scalding hot, but yes.
You can't do much with hot water. Steam expands to like 170 times its size.
Yeah.
You can do something with that. There's power with steam.
Yeah, steam, right? Locomotives.
With the creation
steam boilers,
of steam.
Steam, yeah. Yeah.
And so...
Been doing it for hundreds of years.
There's a lot of people out there that are working what they call hard, and really all they're doing is making 180 to 211 degree water. And they're stopping just short of what it takes to be incredibly powerful, incredibly undeniable. Right? That little extra effort to change it from 211 degrees to 212 degrees is what makes you undeniable.
Yeah.
And that's the like, I'm not stopping until I get the results I want. Right?
Yeah.
That's what makes you undeniable. That's how you navigate ambiguity, is I'm not stopping until I've given everything I have to give and then even more that I thought up along the way. Right? And yeah. So... there's a saying that I've always had for years, and that is sometimes we have to work a little harder for our money. And what that means is there's a lot of guys that will see extra hurdles on a job, and they price those hurdles into the job, and then they lose the job because they've now overpriced the job. One of my guys,
they want to be paid $200 for 10 more extra minutes of work because it's something they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happens a lot.
One of my guys mislocated a sewer the other day. And we still got the job, but I used it as a point to say, you have to work on your locating skills because you thought the sewer was 8.5 feet deep and it's only 4 feet deep. And that's
no shoring.
We went from no shoring needed to it takes 3 times as long to dig an 8 foot deep hole as it does a 4 foot deep hole.
He was at home thinking, fuck Mitch, we made an extra blow. You know what I mean? But you're right.
Right. No, the lesson I told him was like, it's good that we got this job. Right.
Yeah, but you might lose some, man.
You might lose some because now you're pricing a job for 8.5 feet of depth, and it's really only 4, and so it puts your price out of the reach.
Yeah.
Right.
Or they have someone else come in.
Right.
You know what I mean? And now your bid is $6,000 more.
Right.
Than it had to be.
Right. I would much rather get more jobs because you're accurate with your locator than make more money on this one job because you were inaccurate.
Well,
with
that's
because
that's an outlier. Those right. don't happen every week.
Right. But that's the navigation of ambiguity is the ability to, when that happens and when you're digging and you're planning to go 8 feet deep and then you hear crunch at 4.5 feet and you're like, oh shit,
fuck,
the sewer is not nearly as deep as I thought it was.
Yeah.
Some people would say, would rejoice in that and be like, oh, well, cool. Our job just got easier. It's again, the constant pursuit of what can I do better and the recognition of, wow, I almost could have lost this job. Because now the sewer is not as deep.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying we have to go back and change our price and give the customer a discount. I mean, if the customer saw value at the price we gave them, then great.
No, you don't go back to the door.
Right.
Where do you stop?
But what I am saying is we have to recognize that had the bidding on this job been incredibly tight, we would have lost it because we were bidding it for 8 feet instead of 4.
Yeah. If they had 3 estimates, you'd have lost that job.
Right. And so... you know, we talked about like, how do you know depth and everything else and all of that stuff. And you know, there's improvement to that process that needs to happen with that individual. However, it's the ability to stand outside. That bad salespeople will take a laydown sale and brag about it. And then they come up with all these excuses for why they lost another sale. Well, the customer couldn't get approved for financing, or well, the customer didn't have the money. Well, did you offer financing? No. Okay, well then we didn't do everything we could, right? If they don't have the money and they can't get approved for financing and they just have no money or access, like your hands are kind of tied.
Yeah, that ain't on you.
Yeah.
That's on Mitch for bringing you a bad lead.
But yeah. Please fill out this credit approval before we take you on as a customer. But
I know, that's what makes it funny.
Did you know now that you can sign up for installment payments through Klarna for your DoorDash?
You can now
pay for your DoorDash in 4 easy installments.
I don't know what I should say there other than like, people, get your fucking lives together.
Yeah.
If you can't afford DoorDash,
if you have to put DoorDash on payments, that's a problem.
Stop.
Yeah. Go get some mayonnaise. That's some bread. Dude, and some cheese.
Dude, American cheese, and it was off-brand cheese, Wonder Bread from the bread store. We used to go to the bread store.
Yeah.
And fucking my mom loved Miracle Whip. I hate Miracle Whip.
I like it. I like the tang.
Gross.
But learning how to navigate ambiguity
is fucking insane. No, I did not know that.
And ambiguity eliminates the black and white. Okay, so we're gonna end this.
It makes it all gray.
We're gonna end this on a funny thing that you were giving me shit for downstairs before the show. So
I give you shit on so many things. I know. Okay, bring.
So
give
I've
it to me. What
I've
got
all of these things sitting on my kitchen table because so my boat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did. I was giving you shit for that.
My boat has a bimini top on it.
Which is, let's be honest, it sucks. It's tiny.
It's big, but it's not as big as the boat.
Nah.
And so when it's crazy hot and sunny out, or when it's raining.
Yeah, there's four seats.
Everybody's collected
12.
Underneath the bimini instead of spreading out on this nice roomy boat. And so they make bimini extensions.
Yes.
And they range anywhere from $600 for the cheap ones to $1,200 for the expensive ones. And that only gets you a bow or a stern. So now you're going to spend $1,200 to $2,400 to get bimini extensions that go both ways.
Okay.
And so I started looking into these, and they have some that mount to the wakeboard tower, and they
go out. Yeah.
They just extend out, but those are really, really expensive, and they still don't cover the whole boat. So I'm paying a lot more money for less coverage.
Okay.
So they have some others that you can buy that will basically Velcro strap a... like a stretchy canopy to your current bimini top, and then you can install poles on your boat
to hold it out.
To hold it out over the back and the bow of the boat.
Is there a frame?
Not really. Some of them have like little wires that like will pull them apart so they don't squeeze together or whatever.
There's just a ring nut hole in the canvas, and it just kind of the pole goes through it.
Okay. Ties through it.
Gotcha.
So those systems, they're insanely expensive. We're talking like one pole is $400. And then you still have to install it and drill a hole in your boat and everything else, right? And so I got to looking, and I'm like, okay, I like the coverage of those, but I'm not going to spend $400 for one fucking pole when I need four of them. That's $1,200 just in support poles.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm like, okay, these are telescoping poles. I can find telescoping poles for a lot cheaper than these.
I'm trying to decide if I'm going to crush you
or not. And so I go to the hardware store and I get collapsible paint roller poles. They're aluminum.
I saw them.
Yeah. They're aluminum and fiberglass. So they're marine worthy, right? Yeah.
They look okay.
They're going to hold up to the water conditions. And the poles were yellow. So I wrapped them in black vinyl.
Yeah. Vinyl looks okay.
And I still have to drill holes in my boat to mount them. So I'm going to put, like, I'd have to anyway for the others.
I know. I cannot imagine buying, I'm not going to say how much your boat is. I cannot imagine buying a boat that expensive and then drilling fucking holes in it.
Yeah, it happens. I mean.
No, I would buy the fucking extensions for the bimini top so that I didn't have to drill holes in my boat. But that's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me, man.
Well, so.
That's
still an inferior product because those extensions only go out, like, they only give you another 2 or 3 feet of bimini.
I know.
And I want 9 extra feet of bimini.
I know. I'm not drilling holes in my boat. I don't care. Like, my boat is, I couldn't even tell you how old my boat is. My boat's like 12 years old. I will barely drill holes in that boat.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, I want it to be nice. I don't want to fuck up my shit.
Well,
you know,
you see, you and saw the hardware.
Fiberglass. Mine's aluminum.
Yeah. You saw the hardware down there. Like the holes that I'm drilling in it, the hardware that I'm putting in it, it's nice. Nice hardware.
They look nice.
Right?
I'll give you that.
It'll blend in with the boat. You won't even know it's aftermarket whenever it's all done.
I will be the judge of that with the GoPro and then post it on YouTube. But yes.
But so far,
it looks like it'll be okay.
Instead of spending $1,200 to $2,400.
Let's say worst case scenario is $2,400.
So far, I'm in 240 plus 100 plus 50. So far, I'm in for about $400.
Okay.
And I think I've purchased everything I will need.
Okay.
I have to wait for some of this.
$400.
Yeah.
Okay, so you save, as of right now, you save $2,000.
As of right now, I've saved about $2,000. And as of right now, it's cost me an hour of my time.
Okay.
And I, like, install time is not a factor because I would still have to install the other systems too. So install time is going to be about the same no matter which system I would have gone with, whether it's the ones that attach to the tower or whether it's the ones that you have to drill holes and put the support poles in and everything else. And so, like, I'm looking at it like, okay, if install time's the same and I'm going to spend $2,000 on the other one, or I can spend an hour of my time like driving to the hardware store and buying these poles and then wrapping them with black vinyl. Like,
I'd say your 1 hour of time spent so far is an underestimate.
No, it's really not.
You're telling me you spent less than 10 minutes at Westlake and then you spent 50 minutes
wrapping
those poles.
I probably spent 40 minutes at Westlake and 20 minutes wrapping the poles, and then everything else was just online ordering, which I would have spent that time anyway because I'd have to online order and wait for shipping on the other equipment to come in, right? So literally by me navigating the ambiguity of like, okay,
how much would it take if you would have just gone up to fucking the place and been like, put these extensions on?
$4,000.
I'd have paid the $4,000.
Fuck that. My time's not worth $4,000. So that
I'm going to go back through all our podcasts and we're going to talk about how much your time is worth.
You're going to measure how much your time's worth, but once you know how much your time's worth, now you can determine, is it worth it for me to do this myself or is it worth it for me to pay somebody else to do it? Right? So like oil changes, it's not worth it for me to do it. I'll pay somebody else to do oil changes every day of the week. My son's transmission was leaking and we needed to pull the transmission to get it done.
Ugh,
so we crawl underneath that truck.
Is it a stick?
No, it's an automatic.
Oh, I bet that wasn't no fun.
It's an automatic and it's four wheel drive.
Yeah.
So it's got a transfer case and two drive shafts instead of one.
I bet that wasn't no fun.
Two cross members instead of one and like all this shit, right?
Ugh.
So we lay under that truck and it's not it's rusty. And so like, you know, those bolts ain't coming off easy.
Nah.
So I messaged my
blaster him the day before and just don't touch it. Touch it, let them eat.
I call my trans guy, and I'm like, hey, O2 F-150, this motor, this transmission, four-wheel drive, got to pull it and replace the, it's either the input shaft bushing or seal, or the torque converter seal. But if we're going to do all that, you just do both.
Yeah, of course.
What's that going to cost me? And he says $800.
Sold,
dog. And I'm like, okay, me laying on my back for a Saturday and a Sunday, and I don't even, like, I'm good at, working on cars, but I'm not bulletproof. And it's possible.
I'm going to fuck this up.
It's possible I lay on my back, and it's still not fixed, and then I still have to pay the $800. And I gave up a whole weekend to try to save $800. I want my weekend. My weekend's worth $800, right? And so I told my son, I'm like, we're taking this to the shop. We're going to split the cost. And so.
Split the cost. I love it.
Well, my agreement to him was we're going to get him into a truck and I'm covering half of it. He's got to pay for half and I'm covering half.
Yeah.
And so he's
surprised
not.
Surprised he hasn't texted me, hey, can I mow your yard for money?
That's coming after this weekend. He's got some photos to take this weekend and then he's putting in a campaign out there for lawn mowing.
You know how long it'd take him to mow my yard on his little mower?
Yeah. But what I'm saying is
I might pay him to do it just to watch.
There's cases that's ambiguous, right? Do I pay somebody to do it or do I do it myself? Well, how do we navigate that ambiguity? How do we make this black and white? And so it's like, okay, what's our time worth? How long is this going to take me? Is it worth that? No. And it may be for some people, right? When you're poor, you spend time to save money. And when you have money, you spend money to save time because you realize I can make more money. I can't make more time.
No, when, you cannot make time.
But when you're poor, you usually have the time. And so you spend the time to save the money, right? And so situations like this are all through life.
Yeah, well, like, it's every day.
You get a flat tire on the highway. Do I call AAA or do I change it myself, right? And that's a different thing every time.
Do I sit in my car and wait?
Yeah. Usually I'm going to call AAA and ask them and get an idea of how long it's going to take them to get here.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I change that motherfucker.
Well, no, usually, especially if it's rush hour and there's no shoulder on the road or, like, I don't want to be out there. Like,
oh, I'll drive.
Can I get a tow?
I will drive a fucking flat tire for 3 miles before I sit through that situation.
Yeah.
I don't care if it, I don't care if it eats the fucking rim.
But that, so there again, navigating ambiguity. Do I drive on flats? Well, no, unless I need to get into a safe situation.
Yeah, unless I'm going to die on the highway for a $100 rim. Right. No, I'm driving to the fucking next exit.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so,
fuck it.
Those types of navigation are what make you the difference in life, right?
Yeah.
If you're like, no, we fix our own flats around here. Okay, cool. Well, you just died.
Yeah,
because you're
dead.
On a highway with no shoulder.
Ah, you're dead.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody wasn't paying attention, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, little things like that, there's judgment calls that you have to make everywhere.
Yeah.
And the easiest way to learn how to navigate ambiguity is after every judgment call, you have just a little bit of analysis to yourself and say, like, did that go as good as I thought? Could it have gone better? And the ability to think back and say, like, okay, next time I'm in that scenario, yes, I will drive on the rim. Or next time I'm in that scenario, I'll do the job myself.
Yeah.
I'll change my own oil or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And I will just, we're going to wrap up here. I will add to the beginning of that. When something crazy does happen and you have to, and we're not talking about sales, we're talking about like being on the side of the road or whatever.
Yeah.
Try to set your emotions aside. Try to think analytically for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, what? Don't think, okay, my option is to change this tire or call whatever. Think about every option. What are all my options? Do mm-hmm. I change this? Do I drive down the road a little ways? Do I call roadside? Do I call my insurance? Mm-hmm. This happened to Janine because we had free roadside mm-hmm. through our insurance
yep.
because I couldn't get to her. She was halfway back from the lake. I call them. They say, oh, yeah, you do have roadside. You're paying for roadside. I said, dude, this is where she's at. I'm giving you her phone number. And they took care of it. Always try to slow down and think of every outcome. I know this sounds a little nuts. Mm-hmm. Try to think of every outcome and every option you have in front of you and make a decision. And then, like Mitch was just saying, after the fact, go back and evaluate, what did I do?
Yeah.
How could I have done better? Did this decision work out?
Yeah.
And then when you're constantly analyzing every situation you're in before and after, you're constantly analyzing business, you're constantly analyzing your marriage, you're constantly analyzing how you're taking care of your kids, you will be better at decision making.
Absolutely.
And your life will improve regardless of whether it is your marriage or your kids or your business life, whether you're on your own or working for somebody else.
Right.
It will just be better. When we take time to grow mentally, it only helps us in the long run. It really does.
I'm trying to see. Okay, here's our core episodes. Episode 7, I believe it was.
I thought I was trying to wrap this show up.
I know.
Am I the only one?
Oh, no. Episode 7 was community work. Episode 9. What's evaluate nine? Performance, make adjustments, and improve. So we have a whole episode on this. Now, this episode was filmed like 3 years ago.
We've got to reshoot the first one.
Nah, I like them. They're timeless.
No, you don't. They're not timeless. They're horrible. But, the information is gold.
Yeah.
But
So that's how you get to train yourself to constantly be thinking outside the box, is you're thinking outside the box after the fact so that you have that little piece of knowledge that you can use next time.
Yeah.
And then you do that enough, and now all of a sudden you start thinking outside the box beforehand. And that doesn't mean you get it right every time. I still have to do this. I still have to evaluate performance, make adjustments, and improve.
No one is ever going to be perfect. These scenarios we're teaching you, you're still not going to be perfect.
Right.
But you can go from 50% to 70 or 70 to 80.
Right. Like, right.
You know.
And so, like, you're going to find that every situation out there has ambiguity in it, and your ability to navigate that ambiguity is going to be what determines how successful you are or not. And that's if you're an employee, if you're self-employed, if you own a big company, a small company, it doesn't matter. How well do you navigate the unknown? And especially if you're wanting to start your own business or you have your own business, it's literally a world of unknown. You wake up every day not knowing what's going to happen today in your business.
Yeah.
Right? And the more people you have, the more problems you have, so the more unknowns you have.
Yeah.
And the better business owners navigate the unknown better. And it's just that simple. So if you want to step up your business game, learn how to navigate ambiguity.
Yeah.
So
wrap us up, buddy. Great
show. If this show taught you value or taught you anything, if you got value from this show, if there's somebody out there that needs to hear this, tap the share button on this show and send this show to somebody that needs to hear it. You can share this episode to your team of employees. I do that from time to time as we have different episodes that I think would apply to them. So this show grows off of you guys sharing it. So feel free to share it. Until next time, guys, we will see you.